Welcome back to the Weekly Manga Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about all of your favorite ongoing Japanese manga. This week, Akane Banashi hits its third major story arc, Akira Momose rides a bicycle, and Spy Family goes full Dandadan. All that manga news and more coming right up. Hello again, my name is Bruce. I am the proprietor of the White Gray Black YouTube channel. This week and year, Happy New Year, I am joined again by my constant co-host, Gautam.
Hello, hello.
Special shout out and thank you to our Patreon subscribers, Mr. Yaji Black. If you want to have your name read at the top of the episode and see some bonus content, check out patreon.com/WGBmanga. It starts at $3. All right, it's 2025 now. It's a new year. And to coincide with that, Akane Banashi has moved on to a new story arc. This is cool. This is basically the last chapter of, I guess, part two, you would call it. I don't know how many parts we're going to get in Akane, but this is definitely the end of part two. So this is her, she's what? She's like 20, I think? 21? 22?
After the time skip? Yeah, I'd say.
But, well, no, probably. During the second part. Because she's like...
Think she's like 17.
Really? No, she's out of high school at this point. Because the first arc, she was like 16 or 17, I thought.
Yeah, you're out of high school at 17.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I think she's 20. Yeah, she's pre-drinking age. So maybe she's like 19 or something, but I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Can you share your screen?
Oh, yeah, I can. Forgot about that. Okay, there we go.
Wahoo. Okay.
All right, cool. So...
Yeah, either way, we get a kind of significant time skip to where she's kind of out of her teenage years officially. She's an adult now. And by the end of the chapter, seemingly in Paris. But we'll get there.
Yep. This starts off... So this is basically kind of capping off everything that's happened in the past, I don't know, 10 or 15 chapters with Ishiguma's heart attack... Our heart event. I don't know if we actually know it's a heart attack or not, but we're kind of looking at the Ishiguma school here, all kind of looking at a text from someone who we see in the next page is from Ishiguma, and it says, "To my apprentices, I will return. Wait and tighten the loincloth of your heart," which is a kind of saying that he said. and we see Akane getting dropped off at the Isho school. Talking with, I can't remember this guy's name, but he was teaching Akane some stuff a couple
of Arakawa?
No. This light-haired guy.
Oh, the blonde guy. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember he was. Yeah. I don't know. There's lots of names in this and they're all very old Japanese names.
There's a lot of characters in this, but they show up kind of infrequently. So yeah. Anyway, this is the Sasuke rival archetype guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's hard to label any character in the series as like, oh, it's this type of character, because they're all pretty deep and different, but...
They are, but I think this guy is very much Akane's rival.
I don't know, he's a full level above her, but...
Yeah, but he's just obsessed with her.
Yeah,
he's also kind of climbing the ranks, and they gave each other the, I'll keep working hard... And I'll catch up to you kind of spiel, you know?
Yeah.
I think her other rivals, quote unquote, are more so kind of friends she made along the way at this point. Because they all like her. And she likes them.
Yeah. Well, everybody likes Akane. She's like that, so.
These two have the most antagonistic, I'd say, relationship. But they're respectful, but, like, he doesn't like her as, like, a friend. He just sees her as, like... kind of an enemy or someone to help him grow.
Yeah.
It's odd. But yeah, this was a great chapter.
Yeah, I did think it's interesting here at the bottom where it starts contrasting kind of the two schools that Akane is coming from and going into. It says, art is everything in the Isho school. Seniority, personality, emotion are relevant. Only those who stand out via their art are valued. It's the polar opposite of the Ishiguma school. Which Ishiguma school is kind of more, I guess, classic Japanese hierarchy type thing where, you know, the older people have seniority, even if they aren't necessarily the best performers. Like we see, I don't remember, like, the fuck is this guy's name on the left here? The guy on the left who ends up like going to Kyoto and shaving his head, who's like kind of,
oh, right.
Kind of, we're told that he's like definitely just like not the best at Rakugo. Kind of looking for his own style.
Go back real quick. That's the guy in the bottom right who's not the best. I think the guy on the left is one of the seniors who's pretty good.
The bald guy? No, the bald guy is the guy who like didn't know what
he was. God, I can't keep track. I can't keep track of this.
Well, and he changed his hair. He used to have hair that was more similar to this guy's hair, but.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so real quick, on this page, I like, if we review our flashback, right, their master said, my humanity is my art, or he said, my art and my humanity are like one and the same, and I can't sacrifice either, which is why he didn't dispel his apprentices.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of two sides of the same coin here, is what we're seeing with Shigemura and Arakawa, is the Arakawa school. It says only those who stand out with their art are valued. Of course, both schools don't care about seniority and all that stuff, right? All of the rules and kind of regulations around seniority are more lax in both of these schools. It's more about standing out with your art. But in the Shigemura school, it's about prioritizing the human first. And in the Arakawa school, it's about prioritizing the art above all.
Yeah.
So they split what their master said into two different ideologies, which aren't really what their master was trying to say at all. I think the master was trying to say that humanity and the arts are one and the same, right? You can't have one without the other. And I think the Shigemura school leans heavily on prioritizing the happiness of the person and the people, which I think is more along the lines of the master's philosophy, because they still do good art.
Well, I don't think that's right. I do think that it appears on the surface to be more sort of like, how do I say this? What Akane is going to show us is that the Isho school doesn't have the humanity and the Shigemura school is lacking the art. And so she has to combine those to get to the end point in order to perform Shigemura's art. Like
that's exactly
kind of where it's going, is that each side is missing part of it, right? Like Shigemura is definitely more, like you said, more person focused, more about, you know, making sure you're a fulfilled person. And that's why, you know, that's why the people he, you know, tells them, tighten the loincloth of your heart. He doesn't say, you know, go practice your art more, be better at performing or whatever. He's like, you know, steel yourself, you know, make sure you're okay emotionally. And the Isho school is like, practice more, like
and that's exactly what I was saying. It's seen in this page too. It's like you see that like the Arakawa school is solely focused on the arts, and they say it's the polar opposite with Shigemura, showing that they're two sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose just like in terms of how I think about things, the Shigemura school is already doing it right by making people who like what they do and fostering that kind of environment. But
yeah,
I think the author is clearly saying that there's values to both sides, like both sides of thinking, because they're one and the same. You have to have a balance.
And I do wonder if we'll be shown. So I said, you know, that like each of them is kind of maybe missing a part. I wonder if it's more going to be about showing the Isho school the importance of the person rather than. Like, I don't think we're going to get the Shigemura school being like told off, like, you aren't focused on the art enough. Like, you're too focused on the people. That's wrong, wrong, wrong. I think it's going to be more approached from the angle of the Isho school needs to think about the human more, and that will be able to elevate their art more than just focusing on art. Right. Like, I think what we have been shown, and the reason why Akane starts in the Shigemura school, and we're shown that they, you know, produce good Rakugoa, and everyone there is decently happy and self-fulfilled or working towards self-fulfillment and all that, is that I think we're essentially being shown that like the humans are more important, and if the Isho school had more humanity in it, it would be even better. And that's like what's missing from that angle.
I think we see actually, like, because we already have a view of the Shigemura school as great, right? Like, that's, yeah, exactly. If we were going to go into the industry, that's like in this fictional world, that's where we'd want to go because we would be happy there. But the I think what we see is after a 3-year time skip, the appeal of the Arakawa school of being surrounded by brilliant people, mm-hmm. and not just good people, right? Brilliant people. You have a lot to learn from in terms of like methodology and things you wouldn't have learned from like-minded people. You know what I mean?
Mm.
I think that's what we get out of the time skip. In prioritizing art first, you get a bigger variety of people than I think the Shigemo school, who's all kind of aligned and alike. You know what I mean? There has to be, I don't think it's painting Arakawa as wrong. I think they're both right. And I think that's the point.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think what we're going to see after the 3-year time skip is the appeal of the Arakawa style versus the appeal of the Shigemo style, which we already know.
Yeah,
at least that's what I got out of it.
I didn't word my what I was saying right. I agree with you fully. I think that so instead of it being like a 50-50 thing, I guess, where it's like the Shigemo school is 50% right and the Isho school is 50% right and they each need, you know, to be forced together to have the other 50% and they're both 100% right. I think instead of that, we're essentially being shown like the Shigemo school is like 85% correct and the Isho school is missing like the humanity of the Shigemo school. I think it's going to be more about bringing the sort of person first focused of the Shigemo school into the Isho art first thing than it is like force them together and then they'll all be one big thing. Although it could go either way, to be honest. So
I don't think the schools will change until the end of this series, but I do think that Akane is like a catalyst of both, like kind of the encapsulation of their master, where she has the intensity and the kind of mechanical skill to do all the things, but she also has like the human first, fun loving disposition that their master had. I thought an interesting thing in the flashback was when their master like lost their name, Shigemo was like, I guess we have to turn this into the best Rakugo, like the best comedy we can, right? And Arakawa said, I'll be holding on to this like shame for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And that's just like two completely different people and how they react to situations like this. Shigemo was more like his master in that they're like, how do I use this on my art? And Arakawa is I suppose
Isho, more they're both Arakawa, remember, but yeah.
I guess so. Yeah. It's just hard to keep track. Because they all have the same name because they're the same school. But
they're all Arakawa.
Isho is the one who I think took it more.
He was like, this is my fault. When it happened, he like blamed himself. He was like, this is my fault that my master just like lost his job and cannot get promoted to be the top one or whatever. I think they both, Shigemo and Isho both, I think, took it personally, but I think Isho was more like negative on himself about it. Right. Where Shigemo was like, this is unfair. Your master should have done this. And Isho was like, this is my fault.
But I think it tells us a lot about Isho. He holds himself to incredibly high standards and he holds others to incredibly high standards.
Yeah.
And it explains his expulsion of Akane's dad and a bunch of other people at the beginning of the series. But I think it also flies in the face of what his master did for him. And he's forgetting that.
Yeah, I think so.
In trying to respect his master's legacy. All good stuff. Anyway,
it's great. So chapter continues. We get Isho, who's an intimidating. What a great character design. Just of like,
he's
cool eyebrows. He's just scary old guy. Akane being very intense in the background. Akane like apologize. I like this about Akane because she isn't fully sort of like resistant. She like knows that this guy's her master now and the head of her school, and she has to respect him somewhat, even if they do kind of tussle after this. But she basically apologized. She's like, I shouldn't have raised my voice at the hospital. And he's just sort of like, whatever, like, move on. I suppose you've come to ask me, He says, like, I suppose you come to ask me about performing Shigemo's art, and he's basically like, I forbid you from, like, you cannot perform that. You do not deserve it. And she's basically like, she's like, that's what, like, the reason I'm here is because I was taught Shigemo's art, and I'm supposed to be the one to perform it.
I understand exactly why he said this, too. Is,
yeah,
he sees the potential in Akane, so he is making her not practice the style at all, and only do the Isho style, so she can learn a completely different methodology and use them both in tandem.
Yeah.
Just to kind of improve herself as an artist by, like, a large margin, I think.
For sure, yeah. I think that Isho here recognizes that Akane's, the thing that stands in Akane's way when she normally fails is her ego. Like, she knows she's good, and it isn't necessarily that she doesn't want to practice, but being kind of chosen to inherit Shigemo's art, he wants to make sure that Akane knows that she isn't done with her journey just because she knows the story, and she has to keep getting better in order to actually understand it more. So, yeah, this is a nice challenge and limit of, like I'm trying to think of, like, a comparison. It would be like,
I have one.
Go for it.
Have you ever played, like, a fighting game where you just, when you don't know what you're doing, you try out everything and you build up fundamentals? But once you know what you're doing, you have, like, muscle memory of fundamentals of things to do to fall back on. And that creates, like, bad habits that you always, like, default back to things you know works in your head instead of learning new things after a certain point.
Yeah.
And that's, like, a habit you have to break, is you defaulting back to what's comfortable. I think that's why he's forbidding her from doing Shigemo's art, because he doesn't want her to have, like, a comfortable style to default back to. He wants to keep her on her toes, so she's always, like, growing as a artist.
Yeah.
Because growth comes from when you're uncomfortable and when you're learning and you're doing new stuff, right? So,
yeah, for sure. It's not just doing the same old thing. So it is definitely a challenge to Akane to not just, like, you're not just going to be doing all the stuff that Shigemo taught you here in my school. Like, you're going to be doing new, different stuff. So,
yeah.
It's just interesting. They talk specifically sort of about the specific story, which it's confusing because the specific story is called Shigemo's art, quote unquote. Like, that is the name of, like, a story that their master told them that no one has performed since Isho and Shigemo's master, right?
Yeah.
And Isho knows it, and he's also protective of it, and basically says, like, your master, who's, you know, he's 70 or whatever, he's like, he couldn't pull it off. Like, what, again, he's sort of pulling her ego down here. He's like, what makes you think that, like, you can do it? He's like, I didn't realize you thought so highly of yourself. And I think, again, I think that Akane's big failing is sort of her ego, in a way, of that she know, like, she is going to be the best, but she's not yet.
So,
and she knows
that
she's going to be the best. Yeah. And he calls her out here. He's, you know, like, I didn't know you thought so high of yourself. And she, I think this really gets under her skin, because she knows, like, she's definitely one of these people that's like, she knows she has the potential to be the best. But it hurts her to not be told that she's doing good. Like, to be like, hey, rein it in.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because I thought the exact same thing when I saw this, like, reaction of her clutching her garb.
Yeah.
It's just, I was like, this is a hit to the ego moment.
Yeah,
very clearly.
For sure. And he knows it, and he's smart. And because, like we mentioned, Isho's not a bad guy. Like, he's not a bad guy also. Like, he is an antagonist, but I think we're going to see in the next arc that he is more...
he's definitely not a bad guy, yeah.
He cares about the art enough, and Akane will sort of realize that, like, he isn't an uncaring person. He cares a lot. Like, potentially too much is more his failing.
He knows exactly how to hit her. Mm-hmm. At her weak point, because he also has a huge ego, right?
Oh yeah, for sure.
So, like, Akane, and I think everyone in the industry who's, like, at a high level has, like, a certain amount of ego. So I think Isho knows exactly where to hit the weak points here.
There's also no way for Akane to combat his ego, because he's also 70. And the other thing that is interesting is that we haven't seen Isho perform yet, which I think is going to be one of, if not the climax, sort of. So the sort of, the, I would say that the climax of the last big part two arc was definitely the performance by Shigemura, right? The death performance. Like that is legitimately, of all the things that happened, that's kind of the biggest, the highest moment, I guess, the biggest energy moment, because right after that, he has the heart attack. Then we get the flashback, which is kind of falling action. And then here we are starting kind of the next arc. So I think that this arc will, if this arc is not the final arc, because the final arc will be the performance of quote unquote Shigemura's arc, the story, that story. But I think if there's a part four after this or five, the end of this one will be Isho performing, and we'll get to see like why he's so well regarded and what he does differently and better. So
I struggle to view this in parts. What would you say is part one?
Well, it's every time skip, right? Part one is she's a high schooler, like, or whatever. And then
when she's a kid.
Yeah, because this is the second time skip we've gotten. Like, let me see if I can.
Like, chapter one was the first one.
No, she, I'm trying to think.
She was a child in chapter one.
Well, she's like a child, but yeah, I guess at the end of chapter one, she's like in high school. And then, yeah, there's just like big time skips. Let me see if I can figure out. Why, you know, here's a tangent. Why can no one just make a good wiki for I'm on the Akane Banashi wiki. Akane Arakawa.
Oh,
well, here we go.
We could just keep on keeping on.
Age. Okay, yes. So she's, in chapter one, she's 10. In chapter two, she's 16. And then she is 17. Okay, so she's 16, 17, 18, until like chapter 54. So there's like little skips in there. And then she is 18 for most of the, from chapter 54 to chapter 126. And then she's 19 from chapter 126 to now. And then she's 22 after the time. So it was 3 years we're about to see. So,
okay.
So, okay, cool. But yeah, so I basically say that like part one is everything up to where she's like 18 or 19, like out of high school. Cause there was definitely a skip where it's like she was in high school and they do a time skip and she's not in high school anymore.
Got it.
And then, yeah, 18, 19 is kind of like the part two, which is all this stuff before where all she's doing is Rakugo. But yeah, so, yeah, Akane again pushes back here on his show and says like, hey, once I have the skills I need, give me answers like about you and your master, about you and the previous Shigemura. And she's like, I can't back down.
Yeah, she's towing the line pretty well in this interaction where she is like being respectful, but also kind of standing up for herself in an incredibly clumsy way. But that's very Akane.
Yeah, well, and I wonder, because we don't have the like respectful tense or whatever of Japanese, I wonder how like formal this is in Japanese. If she's being like, because I would assume that you're talking to someone above you, you use the like whatever formality language that is. But because, yeah, she is being very forceful. But I do think that he, I do think that Isho is going to end up respecting this of like,
oh, he doesn't give a shit about the formalities of it all. I mean, it's in the it's in the principle of his school not to care about seniority.
Yeah, and he basically does
the apology. He didn't care about the apology at the beginning of this chapter. He just moved past it. So
yeah, and he sort of just accepts her challenge here, right? He's just like, you know, she basically like yells at him, is like, I can't back down either. I have to live up to the expectations placed on me. I have to learn how to master this. And he's like, very well, like, show me what you can do. And she's just like, you're like, it's funny here because like Akane is mad and angry. And Isho is like, again, this is why, like, I don't think Isho is like a quote unquote bad guy. Like he's an antagonist, but he's not a bad guy. Cause he's like, he's not angry at her. Like he doesn't dislike her. He's like, she's talented and she has all this potential and I'm going to make sure she realizes it. And she's mad because she's still a kind of a kid, but.
Well, she's kind of a reflection of both of the masters, right? Mm-hmm. And she has a different, like, she kind of mirrors them when with each of them one-on-one. So I think Isho does see a lot of himself in her. And, same for Shigemura, right? So
I think that Isho sees a lot of Shigemura in her. Like, because Shigemura was more kind of the, bigger personality, more kind of wild and direct and open, like back in the flashback even. And he shows more kind of closed and reserved. So I think he's essentially looking at like, oh, she's just like Shiguma used to be. So
I think what she has over Shiguma from the past is that Shiguma was pretty straightforward. I think Akane is more shrewd in that regard. I think she's more like Isho in kind of how she absorbs things around her, right?
Yeah, she goes after like other Rakugoa and learns from them, and there's lots of stuff that Akane is different and better at than both of these guys for sure.
Yeah, I think ultimately Akane is just like their master, but a different new generation, constantly hungry. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing how this time skip pays off.
Yeah, for sure. I guess this answers kind of the part two. She's a Zenza for the entirety of part two. And then she gets promoted out of that here in part three. And we see, this is our big time skip. We've been talking about 3 years later. She's in France, Paris, and it's Akane looking, I don't know. Yeah, I guess a little bit more adult. She's wearing a jacket. And
she's got a baguette.
Yep. Baguette, jacket, longer hair, maybe about the same hair. But it's interesting that she's in France, in just that France is the like world's second largest manga consumer.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. France literally has a huge a huge culture connection with Japan for whatever reason. And they really, really love manga and comics, manga especially. Like, I think that One Piece sells the most volumes in Japan and the second most volumes in France, and then the third is probably United States, but it might be Philippines or something, but.
And that cuts both ways. Japanese people dream of going to Paris.
Yeah, it's like a cultural exchange thing even. Yeah. But yeah. I am interested to see what is going to be happening here because I messed up my mouse. It's moving very slowly. Oh, I fucked up my DPI. Oh, well. It'll be interesting to see because this is not, I maybe Rakugo, you can perform in France. I don't, is Akane going to just know French? I don't know. I have no idea what's happening here.
I have no idea either. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see. It'll be interesting to find
out.
I'm excited.
There is a Japanese restaurant. Maybe she's just doing normal, Japanese rakugo at that restaurant.
Oh, this is a good call out. I bet she's going to the Japanese restaurant to perform rakugo. I don't think she's going to perform in, a French...
That would be so impressive if she somehow fucking learned French in 3 years and all the techniques. That would be insane. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be wild to be... a rakugo performer in a different language.
No, it wouldn't make sense. Yeah.
Maybe she's just that good. I don't know. All right, cool. Anything else about Akane Banashi chapter 141?
No, we always have stuff to talk about with Akane, though, because it's
great.
Really,
it's the best series of Jump, in my opinion. I think it's great.
I love it. Yeah.
Let's talk about Momose Akira's troubles.
Yeah, I've been loving this series. I think, Bruce, you described it last time as a new Aharon-san. Mm. And that's exactly what it is. You're right. You couldn't have nailed it better than that. It's the new Aharon-san. I think you guys have probably read this before, but it's a rom-com. Emphasis on the com, though, which I appreciate. This was... Like you said, this was definitely the funniest chapter so far.
I think this is the funniest chapter we've gotten of this. We talked about this when chapter one dropped, I don't know, two and a half months ago. And you were more sold on it than I was. I was kind of it was okay. It's funny. It was entertaining. It's been getting better and better. And I think that this is the best chapter so far. Basically, the setup is I don't even know why we get this Jade setup or whatever.
I don't know either.
It's a weird little intro, but basically the intro is Momose doesn't know how to ride a bike. And she's very sort of embarrassed about it. She's I lived in Tokyo, so it wasn't really necessary. Her sense of balance doesn't seem great either.
Her friend always has the same face on and looks concerned.
Yeah.
Every single panel she's in, she looks mildly concerned about something.
I mean, to be honest, any normal person looking at the things that have happened to this girl should be at least mildly concerned.
I mean, like, it's how does she manage is.
Well, and especially like, after this chapter. So basically they say like, oh, we have an idea. We're going to get MC Kun here to teach you how to ride a
bike.
Let's just call him
Deku.
I don't remember his name at all, but
he looks like Deku. Everyone thinks he's Deku. He has super strength. This is just Deku. Deku is like kind of coaxed into teaching her how to ride a bike. And he's like, how did this happen?
Yeah. It's funny because we're just talking about setup to like what I think is the best like 6-page joke like in the entire series. But yeah, so Momose here is like, good morning, please help me. And he's like, what is this? He's like, could you teach Akira how to ride a bike? He's like, huh? It's like, why would Momose-san ask someone like me for help? She looks super uncomfortable. Again, there's this sort of misunderstanding of like, he thinks that she hates him and she's actually going to panic because she has a crush on him and all that. And then we get these pages, which I think are great. It's like a chance to raise my affinity points. Like, I'll do my best to teach you how to ride a bike. And she has like her script that she normally has. And he's like, okay, let's start by getting used to the bike. Straddle a bike, keep your fur family. And then we get this great her just flying off the bike. It's like, how do you even fall like that? and then it's great. And it's best for me to just like click through these pages because you're going to see just like it happens again
with the training happens wheels. Again.
And it's just I love these 6 pages.
What is great about all three of those panels is that he uses his superhuman speed to break her fall every single time she goes over the bars somehow. Even with training wheels, she goes over the bars.
Oh, yeah. But, I didn't even notice that he like catches her here. And then, yeah, this one, he's like under the bike. But yeah.
Yeah. And she scares like a different animal every single time she goes over the bike bars.
Oh, yes. There's so many little jokes I didn't even notice. Yeah. It's like the snake, the raccoon, the fox. That's so funny.
Yeah.
God. Yeah. This is one of the best gags I've seen in manga in a long time. Like just this chapter alone, like the fact that these pages, like if you were turning them in a manga volume, like you would just see them, you know, like every left page is like her falling, every right page is like a little bit of a setup. And his face, I like Deku's face on the left, he like gets more concerned and then he's like under the bike.
And I by the end of it, he's like, I gotta help her, but this is not gonna happen.
Yeah, so we get a little break. He's like, okay, like you, if you can't ride a bike, like just sit on the back and I'll take you there. It's like hug him and she's like, it's really close. And they still get like flung off. This audibly made me laugh because I was like, oh, okay, they're going to end it on a sweet romantic moment. And then it's just like, boop, nope. They're flying off again. It's like a Shiba dog and an old dude and the things.
I love how peaceful she looks as she's like hurtling in the air.
It's so funny, actually.
I think she's just like magically cursed as pretty to not much. Ride
yeah.
a bike.
I mean, yeah, it's. It is extra. She's extra unlucky, but I don't know. Like, and you're right that you mentioned the chapter before this also is really funny. I think the wilder this series gets, the better it's gonna get. Because I think that my concern with the early chapters was like, well, yeah, you know, it's kind of funny, but it's very kind of realistic. Realistic isn't even necessarily the right kind of knock against it, but it was like,
won me over when she chloroformed him in the in like the locker area or whatever.
That was like like chapter 2 or 3 or whatever, but
in the last chapter it's like it cuts out all of the fat and all of like the non-fat, like all of the meat too, and it's like it puts us in the middle of one of her plans to give him a cupcake and they're both like shut in the locker for whatever reason, and it's like, damn, like next chapter they're gonna be dangling off the side of a volcano and it's not gonna explain how they got there.
I do think that this author is finding their stride as this goes on. I hope that people, read this and buy volumes because
really
I hope it'll keep going.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else on Momose Akira's Very Unlucky? I can't remember the full title of this.
this is our new Two Idiots rom-com. Like the new
first love struggles. Yeah.
Yeah. The two dumbasses or two weirdos get together.
Yep. There always has to be one.
There always has to be one running.
excited about that. Cool. Let's talk about Spy Family. This is chapter 109. So this is, I can't remember Miss Desmond's first name, but
Desmond's mom. Desmond's mom. I forget too.
I can't remember. Names are hard. This is Miss Desmond. Yeah. The mom who's kind of befriended Yor in the past. And Yor was like, oh, like go see my husband. He's a psychiatrist, you know, he'll talk to you and everything. Lloyd is excited about this because he's kind of been handed a golden goose of like, basically it's like, it appears that Yor's been gradually deepening her relationship. Oh, Melinda. And so much that she's provided an inadvertent assist on my mission. So Lloyd is excited here because he's gotten, you know, the wife of the person he is most concerned about, like getting close to.
It's kind of funny how Lloyd is like, we know how competent he is, but everyone else is actually just doing the work for him.
Pretty much. Like if you look at like Lloyd has prevented some tragedies from happening. But as far as like progressing his mission of getting close to the Desmond dad, Anya and Yor have done more in that regard by like, I actually don't think Lloyd has done any. He kind of made friends with like the servant guys in the last couple of chapters when they were at the fair or whatever. But that might come into play too. But.
And that's also because of Anya being.
That is also because of Anya and Yor. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. I think Anya has done like so much heavy lifting, but.
And I think that's the premise point, right? Of the series. Yeah. Exactly. That's the point.
But yeah, I think this is a good chapter because it toes the line between funny and like kind of this woman is traumatized by her situation.
Yeah, which we've kind of seen in the past that, you know, something with the Desmond dad is, you know, he's a very intense guy, I guess you'd say. I do like how it starts here with her like putting up karate hands to like fight him off because Yor told him like, oh, sometimes he has to like punch people really hard to cure them or whatever. Cause Lloyd has used that excuse in the past.
Therapy.
Concussive therapy. Yeah.
So I'll say one thing. So Bruce, I've seen The Sopranos.
Yes. I have too.
Goodfellas and The Irishman.
Hold on. Wait, this happens every day. There's a guy with a car. And he starts his car up, and he's going to rev the engine.
I don't think we can hear that, man. I can't hear it. Well, maybe it's going to.
Well, it's going to show up when I'm talking, because when I'm talking, it's going to go above the gate.
Oh,
and it's
okay. Show up.
It takes about 1 minute, and he's going to rev his engine and drive off. There he goes, starting. He does this every fucking day. I need to look at what his. Yep.
Oh, there. I heard that.
Yeah.
Wow. So obnoxious.
This started happening like 1 week ago.
Someone got a new car, I guess.
I don't know. It's annoying.
Yeah, that is frustrating. Are we
okay?
Good?
Okay, they're gone now. Yes.
Oh, Melinda. Okay. Melinda Desmond. Okay, there it is. Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, yeah, I've seen The Goodfellas, I've seen The Irishman, I've seen The Sopranos. She is like Carmela from The Sopranos, where she's like a mafia wife.
Mm-hmm.
Where her husband is doing terrible things around her and she's truly afraid of him and she's kind of stuck in this marriage with children, and that's why I think she has these conflicting emotions surrounding Desmond, where she does love him and that's why she wants him to go away, because or like get out of her life, because she sees herself and her husband as kind of threats to him. And
yeah,
she can't give him a good life or a normal life is how she feels about it. Even though she does. Yeah,
that's a really interesting comparison. Do we know enough about Desmond to know that he is like I'm trying to think of how much we know about him. Like we know that he used to be the like president of the party or whatever, and he's not anymore. I feel like we don't know much about like what he actually does now. Right. Like we know that he's kind of like emotionally abusive, I guess you could say, towards like his kids, and yeah, his wife clearly, but I don't know if we necessarily know that he's like doing bad stuff politically or like mafia-esque thing. I think we can presume, but I don't know.
Basically, I think we can presume that he is a terrible person just by looking at his family, but also by looking at kind of our characters, Lloyd, who is like a very just person, despite his occupation. And at the beginning, it's like Desmond is the catalyst for a potential another world war within this world, right?
For sure. So, yeah, I didn't think about that. But yeah, he is still sort of implied to be very important enough that he has the power to start another war, essentially, whether that is by him dying or by him making an action or whatever. So
also, he's freaky as fuck.
He is weird. He is just weird. And we'll get to that at the end of this chapter. But yeah, so there's a little bit of kind of back and forth of Melinda here talks kind of about the past, about how kind of after the end of the war, you know, she was the former first lady, blah, blah, blah. You know, several, you know, all these nations were watching her, blah, blah, blah. She says, I think I finally accepted that I do need to chat. Like, it's all very like Melinda, I think, is a good mom. Like, I think we've kind of been shown like she's as good as she can be in the situation, which your comparison to like Carmela or somebody from the Sopranos, I think, is apt. Like, or even like Skyler in Breaking Bad, where it's like a little bit of an accomplice, but also very much just trying to do her best for her kids or kid and all that and family and stuff. So yeah,
more of a hostage, right? Because by circumstance, because she has kids.
Circumstantial hostage. Yeah, for sure. She's like, you know, this is a really good chapter. I just like it because it's very sort of like, last time I was here, I sought help as the spouse of a party chairman. Today, I'm just here as a mother and as a wife. And then it gets funny. she goes, do you believe in UFOs? And Lloyd is like, and he's like, what do I say? How far do I go? Do I need to embrace it? Do I need to deny? Is this a test? And he goes on like a page long rant. I don't think I have the full page in here. It was like a page long rant of like, well, you know, I haven't seen one, but blah, blah, blah. Like maybe it happens. I've read a bunch of stuff. And he like goes on this full page.
He's like a huge UFO nerd. Like clearly.
He's just like, one of those things. It's just like he knows enough about every subject to be familiar to talk about it with anyone because he's a super spy. And like of course he can.
Like, I agree with that. I think he is just by proxy a really good spy. So he knows about everything. But it seemed like he was actually really interested in the topic. And because he's like, yeah, there's some unpublished studies that I was really interested in from this magazine. It's like
he knew the magazines and knew everything. Yeah. And then, So, and then it's funny because he goes on this like rant and he's like, oh, of course, I'm sorry. We were talking about your family, Miss Desmond.
I think he kind of won her trust to like be open because of how much of a UFO nerd he was. She was willing to share a little bit more.
Yeah. And then we get my husband, actually. And he's like, it is Donovan. He's like, in truth, my husband is an alien. I love this like final page. He's like, say it again. They're both like incredibly serious. I think for reference, I think this is probably a joke, which I think she, because we've seen that she's into like this paranormal stuff, which is clearly doesn't work. She is also this sort of like bored housewife conspiracy theory nut where it's like pseudoscience and all this stuff. Like this is the thing that like, quote unquote, like the stereotypical bored housewife is going to be into, you know, I'm a Sagittarius, so I can't talk to you today because you're a Cancer or whatever, right? Like, that is exactly the kind of person that I think Melinda Desmond would be. And so her doing the kind of the tarot card magic at the fair, and then I think here believing in aliens, I think this is, I think this is going to lead to Lloyd maybe learning more about, what was his name, which I forgot already, Donovan. Donovan Desmond, who's the guy, and... But I don't think he's an alien. Like, I think this is her being, like I said, a little bit of a bored housewife type character.
I think it's her trying to reconcile things that aren't in her control, you know, like her whole situation. I think she's trying to attribute it to the supernatural because that's also a mysterious thing out of anyone's control.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's clear that he's like keeping secrets from her and doesn't divulge stuff and comes home probably
weird.
Weird because he has to, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, he's probably like overseeing torture, you know, or doing something traumatic. And so he's messed up. It's funny though, because like mentioning like Skyler and the wife in the Sopranos, his name, Carmela, like those are, smart characters. Like, those are smart people. Like, even, and like, Carmela knows she's married to like a mob guy. Like, she doesn't like want to admit it a lot of times. And Skylar, you know, like, she notices her husband starts acting different. She notices when things are different, and she kind of plays along for a little bit. She's also smart enough to get out and all this stuff. Like, they're smart characters. I think it's funny because here, I think Melinda Desmond is like not a smart character. She's like, clearly, I clearly does not understand.
I think she's just traumatized and trying to attribute it to like the dark arts when reality is just brutal. Did you notice her Illuminati earrings?
I didn't, but now that you say that, yeah, she does have Illuminati earrings, which I wonder if Desmond is part of some like secret society, you know, historically people like,
dude, I bet.
I mean, not the Illuminati. Who's the, who's the Freemasons and stuff like that? Like, they've been involved in, I'm not going to go full conspiracy theory to be like, they've manipulated elections, but like, that was like a club that had important people in it historically. I wonder if he's
part of something, some weird organization.
Yeah. Well, and I do wonder, because again, like, we don't know a whole lot about Desmond. So I wonder if we're maybe finally getting kind of to the meat of the story of like, are we finally going to figure out, like, is Lloyd finally going to connect with the guy who he's been chasing for 109 chapters, you know, that he's been assigned to do things with?
Desmond seems like a guy who's pretending to be a human. So I get why she thinks he is an alien.
I mean, sure.
You could tell, like, from his response to the family dinner that was hugely uncomfortable for everyone. At the end of it, after everyone excused themselves and didn't talk, Desmond's like, wow, that was a truly eventful evening.
What a great
dinner. Actually happy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was more so that he doesn't understand that everyone's uncomfortable. And he ticked off the box that it's like, I had dinner with my family. Now I can go back to doing the stuff I care about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. It's funny. And as soon as I said this, I was like, you know, he is a really weird guy. Like, maybe he is an alien. I think it's probably something else. But
yeah, you know what? Yeah.
I don't. How would you feel? Because I don't know how I would feel. How would you feel if there are aliens in Spy Family? Like, what if that is the thing that is like threatening war and tearing apart the country? I don't think that would be so dog shit. Yeah, I don't think I would like it, because I think it would lessen this impact of like all of the war stuff that has been very real and direct, and I think really well told. I think making it aliens would be bad, which is why I don't think he's an alien. I think it's more likely that he's,
there's no way he's an alien. It wouldn't make sense.
It would make more sense.
Traumatized. But he is not an alien. It would be so stupid if he was.
It would make more sense even just for the technology we've seen, that maybe like someone has like a bug in his brain, you know, like a chip in his brain that's like, you know, messing him up that way or something. And maybe Lloyd will like remove it and then he'll be like a good dad again. I don't know.
That would be so cheesy. But
it would be cheesy, but Spy Family is cheesy like that sometimes. So
I guess it's just like, I think like the good ending for Desmond is his mom and his brother make it out of this. I don't think his dad really does. Because he's like a warmonger, right? Like, I don't know.
Well, we don't really know. We know that he holds important keys for potential future war. I don't necessarily know that he like started past wars or is like propagating the Cold War too much. I need to go back and read the start of why they assign.
He seems like a Stalin-esque figure. I feel like this is like if you took a chip out of Stalin's brain and he's like, well, I'm really sorry about that, guys. And I'm really sorry to my family who I've neglected. It's like,
sorry about the genocide.
that would be so insane.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll have to see. I think I'm excited for the next chapter, because I think it'll reveal more about older Desmond to us. So
yeah, me too. And you know, the chip thing, I didn't think about that, but he does have like scars on his head, right?
I think so. Like I have to remember. I think he does, which is, yeah. Cause he, I mean, to, like, going by, like things that we know, I'm pulling a picture of Donovan Desmond here. Like, he looks like a dude who might be mind controlled, doesn't he? Like, the more that I like think about it, it's like, yeah, maybe. Like,
well, we can't be falling for Melinda's conspiracy, alien conspiracy theories, because they all look like that. That look at their dog in like the previous chapter. Their dog looks like that. Like everyone in that family, your dog,
but yeah.
Yeah, the dog has wide eyes, just like
oh yeah, yeah.
Just like Desmond
I do
does.
Like I do wonder though, like it looks doesn't it look like someone cut the top of his head off and put it back on with those scars? Like he got some kind of brain thing? I don't know.
It does look like that, which is why you might be right.
Maybe it's not a chip in his brain, or maybe they literally replaced his brain with someone else's brain. I don't know.
Here's my shot is that he got he was in the war at some point as a young man. He got shot and they had to do surgery on his brain or whatever, and he lost his ability to feel empathy.
I don't know, because I think we see him being more empathetic in the past, right? Like even after he has kids. Maybe not. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I'm curious what the scars are about, though. That's a good call out.
Because this is like a spy thriller thing, and there's definitely been thrillers where it's like there's a chip in his brain, or they're mind controlled, or I don't know if it's gone full like brain replacement, but you know, Mission Impossible has done stuff like that before. So
and Mission Impossible has done crazier stuff, like the masks of people, like.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and those masks essentially exist in Spy Family also. Lloyd has worn a ton of them where it's like, oh, he's just a completely different guy.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, yeah, they do. So, yeah, this is very Mission Impossible.
It's a spy, ex-family, it's spy thriller stuff. So, yeah, I imagine that it'll be something like that, where it's like maybe he's brain. I think my called shot is some kind of brain control is happening on Donovan Desmond, and Lloyd will remove it, and he will be like a good dad, and that will be the like fix. He'll like fix the family, and Donovan Desmond will be indebted to him.
I wish we had a running tally of all of our competing predictions.
Almost never right, I would say. But like,
I know.
Unless something is very obvious. Nice. But
it would be nice to have a scoreboard just for funsies.
I will hold on. I'm gonna, you know what? It's 2025. Let's do it. I'm just gonna make a new document here.
Oh, that sounds great.
It's like a new Google Doc. It's just gonna be called. Cold Shots 2025. Baby. Bruce Spy Family. Donovan Desmond Brain Control
and
Theory. I don't know.
and put Gautam Donovan Desmond bullet in the head empathy gone away theory.
Like brain trauma.
Yeah, okay,
trauma slash surgery, something like that.
Yeah, that makes okay, sense. Cool. Yeah,
yeah. We'll just type them all in this document, which I'm just gonna
call. Yeah, that's shots. Great.
And then maybe at the end of the year we'll review and be like, did we get any of these right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that'll be our 2025 thing. Anything else on Spy Family here, Gautam?
Nope. Honestly, great chapters.
All around. Really good chapters. Really good start to the year so far. Let's do manga news. There's not a whole lot. Nanashi, the author of Nagatoro, they're planning a new series. I'm excited for that. I thought Nagatoro was really good. I'm excited to see how that goes. The only other real news thing, not a whole lot of news start of the year. New Year's is kind of a big holiday for the Japanese. I think that's one of the reasons we got the chapters a little bit early.
Earlier, yeah.
Yeah. Go check out on our channel. We have a Gachi Akuta read-through. If you haven't checked out Gachi Akuta, that's a really cool thing. There are times where I think I would like to bring that into the regular show. I think that's something that it would be a good weekly discussion. But we're also doing discussions at this point, and they'll be every 3 months, basically with every volume publication. But yeah, so go check that out.
Let's leave the discussions for Gachi just to those videos, just because I read them a volume at a time. And I think it's like, nice to have it all in one place instead of splitting them off into weeklies.
Yeah, that's true. But anyways, I think everyone should go check that out. I think that's actually we've gotten a lot more traction on that than I assumed. I also want to tell people to go check out our year in predictions video. We go over what we predicted in 2024 that we got right and wrong, mostly wrong. And make some predictions for 2025, which I think you'll want to maybe drop your own predictions on that one. And also go check out the Manga Awards. There's a lot of Game of the Year discussions, Game of the Year top 10s, Movie of the Year, Television Show, Art of the Year. You don't see a whole lot of manga people doing, manga top 10s, manga awards, stuff like that. So go check that out. I think you'll enjoy that. Gotten some good feedback on that. So go check out those two videos. I think anyone watching would enjoy those. And let's go to do our one more thing. What else are we doing, Gautam?
I'm playing Outer Wilds. I was craving like a detective mystery type game after Obra Dinn, and I had Outer Wilds. I just bounced off of it. a few times, and I gave it like a meaningful 6 or 7 hours, and it's so good. It's just so good. It's beautiful. Like, what a lovely game about like life and death and everything in between, mystery, appreciating the now. Like, it's a very meaningful and dense game, but I think you have to be in the mental state to appreciate it.
Yeah. It's also a cool game because I've watched a lot of people play it. It's a cool game because if you have played it before and you know what to do, like, you can just boot up the game and beat it. It's cool because, like, you really, what's happening is you aren't getting more power-ups or more things. You're just learning things. And once you learn things, you know what to do and how to figure it out. And so, yeah, it's all just a knowledge acquisition thing.
I've never seen a game like this. This is,
no, there aren't many games like this at all.
I haven't fully beat it yet. I'm at the end, but I say that because, like, as soon as I start the game, I'll be in the same spot as you will be if you start the game. It's just that I know how things interact, some of the mysteries are, and how they function. It's like, I can do this whole thing in like 15 minutes at this point. I'm like at the very end.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's cool. It's cool that a game works on the player's knowledge of how it works.
It's a really immaculately designed game. Like, the year this came out, I think this came out in 2021, maybe 2020. Everyone talked about there's not many or any games like this, really, where it's just kind of,
there's nothing like this.
It's kind of like a knowledge roguelike. It's just like you restart the day and you have more knowledge, and that means that you're kind of, this run is better and you learn different things. It's a really, really cool game.
You know, the games are art discourse, how that's gone back and forth. I think should be used as the prime example of games being its own art form, because this could not be done outside of a video game.
Yeah, I agree with you. And then once you beat the game and get through the ending, you'll say that even stronger, I think. So
I bet. Yeah, I have like probably 30 minutes of the game left, so I'm going to do it today.
Oh, cool. I mean, you're still, the end is kind of long.
Oh, okay.
Like, you complete what you are supposed to complete, and then there is more on the end that takes a little bit of time, so.
Oh, okay, got it. Okay,
it isn't just like you do the thing and congratulations, game over, or whatever, but yeah, so.
Good to know.
I finished reading Wind and Truth. I believe I brought this up, I think, when I had started reading it. I have some thoughts about this book. I won't go into too much detail. This is the fifth Brandon Sanderson Stormlight Archive book, Wind and Truth. This is the end of kind of the first half of his large epic fantasy series, kind of the first half of it. A lot of issues with this book. I'm a huge Brandon Sanderson fan. I bring up his writing style and thoughts a lot. This book just needed more editing, which is really unfortunate. And, well, I don't know. A lot of people have found a lot of issues with this book, is what I will say. And to quote Brandon's words back at him, is that if someone tells you there's something wrong with your book or your writing, they are probably right. They don't always know how to fix it. So me saying that it feels like it needs more editing, maybe that's not what it needed. Maybe it needed something else. But there was a lot in this book that made it feel really uneven. So of the five Stormlight Archive books and the three novellas, this has some of the worst moments of any of those books in it. In fact, I think this has some of Brandon's worst writing in it ever. Like, you know, and he started writing 22 years ago, I think, maybe his first book came out. And I think this has some of his worst writing in it, which should not happen in a guy who's been writing and publishing this many books. Like, you should just be getting better. The floor should be raising. That being
He's stretched thin, though, right? Maybe it's that.
Yeah, and again, that's the thing of that it's really hard to know what the quote unquote fix is for this book. And I can only really say that what the problems are, and then, you know, hopefully Brandon takes this to heart and figures out how to not make these mistakes again. I will say, saying that it has some of the worst moments of Brandon's writing, I also think this has some of the best moments of Brandon's writing, which is why this book is I think being really divisive in that it is a bunch of sort of character arc endings and stuff being resolved and things being set in motion for the books in the latter half, which we're going to get in 8 or 9 years. Really high highs and really low lows, which is why it's a very kind of weird book. It's probably my least favorite Stormlight archive book. I would probably put it fourth or fifth at the bottom. But it also has some of the best moments in it. So it's really tough to, it's a really tough book to have conversations about, I'll say.
Yeah. Because high highs, low lows.
Yeah. Really low lows and really high highs. And, the stuff in between is people argue about it, whether it was good or not, whether they liked it or not. So yeah, weird book. All that being said, Brandon Sanderson is so digestible and easily readable, and he's such a good author at pulling you through the pages that, like, even when I was reading things that I didn't particularly like, it's so easy to turn the page and read the next one. Like, he's just that kind of author for me. So
yeah, you don't ever feel like, well, okay, that was a slog, I'm gonna put this down for a second and come back to it. You're like, okay, let's on to the next thing, right?
I would be turning the pages because it's a page turner, and then you'd get to like a chapter break and you'd be like, wait a minute, that sucked. And you'd be like, okay, well, I'll keep reading because we're off that story on another storyline now. And it's like, okay, this part's good. Weird book. I did, like I said, I did enjoy a lot of it. I also did not enjoy a lot of it, but yeah, a strange book.
Interesting. Okay.
I am excited for his future endeavors, because he's going to go back to smaller things after this is kind of like his big fantasy epic, and it's the climax of a lot of things, and it's the halfway point of an even larger story. So I do think that he will be served better sort of going back to writing a 3-book series and a 2-book series, and yeah, we'll get back to Stormlight in, like I said, 8 or 9 years. So
Jesus, that long.
So he is going to write so if you're familiar with his works, he's written Mistborn. There's 3 books in the Mistborn series. There's 4 books in Mistborn, quote unquote, Era 2. What he's writing next is he's going to write Mistborn Era 3, which is going to be like a 1980s kind of like a tech thriller, like an 80s tech thriller type thing. In the sort of Mistborn world, he's going to write those 3 books kind of back to back, like one a year, basically. And then make sure that they're all kind of edited and make sense together, and then start publishing them after that. And then he's going to write 2 more books in the Elantris series, which is his very first published book. So he's he's going to basically write 5 books. I think we are getting a book from him this year that is already written. And then in 2026, maybe we don't have a book planned. I think 2027 is the Mistborn Era 3, book 1, and then the next 5 years, starting in 2027, will be like Mistborn, Elantris, Mistborn, Elantris, Mistborn. That's 5 years, and then we'll be at 2032, and then I think 2033 is Stormlight 6. So the man has it planned out. I hope he doesn't have a heart attack and die. He's a large dude, but we'll see.
Dude, what a regimented fucking life.
This guy publishes anywhere between 1 to 4 books a year. Like, he's the opposite of George R. R. Martin or Patrick Rothfuss. Like, he writes and he publishes stuff all the time. He is always publishing. He's always writing, which is really what's great, is that I'm confident that if he doesn't die, he will write everything he said he will write.
Is he that at that much of a risk of death?
I don't know. He's big, but says he does healthy things. It's hard to say. I don't want to bring too much into how much of a risk of death are you if you are overweight and have been overweight for years. I don't know. It concerns me. I will say, I look at him and I say, God, I hope Brandon Sanderson does not have a heart attack or something.
Well, I hope not either. The dude seems like a machine, like Murata is, you know?
Yeah, he's a machine. He's a good writer. As an author who sort of talks to his fans and does fan interaction and stuff, he's maybe the best ever. Even if you don't like his writing, you have to admit that he is changing the world of publishing too. Like, he has the largest Kickstarter ever, I think, from his, he wrote during COVID when everything got locked down, he couldn't do book tours and stuff. So he just wrote 4 books and then did a Kickstarter campaign that you could support and get his 4 books. And I think that raised something like $300 million or something like that.
Oh God, what? Holy shit. That's crazy.
Yeah. Most funded Kickstarters. Yes. Surprise. 4 secret novels by Brandon Sanderson. Does it tell me how much it made? 44,000 backers. I wish that it told me. Oh no, he made $41 million.
Okay, that's a number that's still a lot of insane money. That's still an insane, but it's not
for
the
books,
astronomical like, figure that I thought.
He essentially made $10 million on this Kickstarter per like book he published. So anyways,
that's wild.
He is changing things. He basically held out putting his books on, was it Audible for a time? And he kind of, cause like his books sell like 70 or 80% audiobooks. And he basically said like, hey, if you don't give me and smaller authors a better deal, he basically was like, hey, you're stipping smaller authors. Give him a better deal or you can't have my books. And they were like, okay, we'll do that. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah. He's a good guy, I think, even though this book had some bad parts in it, but cool.
Yeah. He seems thoughtful.
Yep. I think that's it. Hey, thanks again, everyone, for listening or watching. Don't forget to leave us feedback, upvotes, comments, thumbs up, all that jazz. Click the like, click the subscribe. Check out Twitter, Patreon, link in the description. Thank you for being with us yet again this week.
Goodbye.
And don't forget to read more manga.